The First Presbyterian Church was chartered in 1859, and the building you are sitting in now is the second church building on this particular site. The first church was built in 1865 and was located at 3rd and Main Street. The second church building was built on this site in 1888. It was a red brick Gothic structure. When the 1888 church was being demolished, certain materials were carefully removed and stored so they could be reused in this building. Construction of the current building was started in 1924 and was completed in 1925. The church was designed by Ernest Olaf Brostrom. He was born in Sweden in 1888 and began as a draftsman in Sioux City, Iowa. In 1911, at the age of 22, he moved to Kansas City to establish his own office. As he settled in, he became a great admirer of the Chicago School of Architecture, which included the works of Sullivan and Wright. Brostrom was awarded the design work for the First Presbyterian Church in 1923. The design is considered a collegiate Gothic style architecture. The exterior includes tapestry brick, native stone, and of course, our red clay tile roof. The church spent approximately $200,000 on tearing down the former church, purchasing additional lots, building and furnishing the church and the manse, and installing the new pipe organ. In today's dollars, this would equate to over $3 million. What's truly remarkable is that the building was dedicated debt-free on March 28, 1925. There were 399 contributors to the building project. J.H. Reddick of Fort Smith, Arkansas was the general contractor. Reddick's company was primarily known actually for building municipal buildings. His company built the Mitchell County, Texas Courthouse in Colorado City, Texas in 1924, and also the Marshall, Texas City Hall. Some of the final building expenses are as follows. J.H. Reddick Contractor, $122,000. J.J. Anderson Heating and Cooling, $11,000. Bierman Plumbing, $3,608. Jacoby Art Glass Company for the windows that you see in the sanctuary, $2,450. Brostrom Architects, $3,850. That's pretty good pay back then. The manse, $15,122. The following are some of the interesting facts about the new Presbyterian Church, which appeared in the Fort Scott Tribune on March 28, 1925, the day before the dedication. There's 33,676 square feet in this building. There are 46 rooms, 85 doors, 179 windows, 264 light bulbs. Kathy? The height of the church tower is 88 feet. The dimensions of the auditorium are 53 by 62. The capacity seating of the auditorium, they say is 1,000 people. I think it'd be a little tight, but we'll go with it. And the organ weighs 27,525 pounds. As the economy declined due to the Depression in the 1920s, so did Brostrom's practice. His notable designs include the First Presbyterian Church of Fort Scott, the Grace Methodist Episcopal Church in Winfield, the George Rushton Baking Company in Kansas City, the Welburn Community Congregational Church, and the St. Stephen Baptist Church. Brostrom later became president of the Con-T Company, which made products used in reinforced concrete construction. He actually came back to Fort Scott and spoke during the church's 90th anniversary and the building's anniversary of the church building in 1949. Brostrom died at the age of 80 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in 1969, and the church was placed on the National Register of Historic Places in 2009, 150 years after the church founding. Some things I'd like to point out about the church, the symbols and shields, and I'd actually like for you to look. At the dedication dinner downstairs, Brostrom took time to explain that he sees things in his church that other people miss. He told the crowd that their new church had many symbols that he added during the design phase of the building. The shields at the end of the trusses, these trusses here, on the west side of the sanctuary represent the Old Testament, and on the east side, the New Testament. For the Old Testament on the west side, the first is the tree of life, the apple representing original sin. And actually, they're clear back above the balcony toward the very back. The next is the ark, symbolic of Noah and the flood. The horse rearing up is a symbol of war, a symbol of intellect and reason. The next is the cross of Calvary. Then the half shields here represent the descending dove. The descending dove represents the baptism and the love of Christ. For the New Testament, everybody go this way, the Bethlehem star in reverence to baby Jesus, the ship with the 11 sails representing the 11 faithful apostles, the lamb, which is right here, the people need a shepherd, the cross and the shield with the Easter lily in the background represent the death of Christ, it is finished. And another half shield represents an ascending dove. The ascending dove represents prayer and the aspirations of man. The stained glass in the sanctuary was manufactured by the Jacoby Art Glass Company in St. Louis, Missouri. As I said before, the church paid $2,450. As a result of a large German population that had immigrated to St. Louis at the turn of the century, the city had become a primary center for stained glass in the United States. It is generally acknowledged that the best stained glass in the nation was actually produced in St. Louis. Emile Free and the Jacoby Art Glass Company were the largest of the six major studios. Emile Free had approximately 80 employees in St. Louis and actually had 35 others in Munich, Germany at the height of production. The Jacoby Art Glass Company started in 1896 as the G.A. Spies Glass Company. It later merged with H.H. Jacoby and became the Jacoby Spies Manufacturing Company. H.H. Jacoby was the son of Ludwig Jacoby, who founded the first German Methodist church west of the Mississippi in 1841. By 1900, the firm was known as the Jacoby Art Glass Company. H.H. Jacoby was active in many different trade associations and was a founder of the National Ornamental Glass Manufacturers Association in 1903. At the death of H.H. Jacoby, it was sold to a young man, 31 years old, named Fred Opplinger. He and his lead window designer, Lee Cook, who studied at the Chicago Art Institute, he joined the firm around World War I and was there until the studio closed. As Opplinger became active in the Stained Glass Association of America, he guided the studio away from the opalescent or Tiffany style glass, which is actually what we have, into the painted European style work. Designer Cook excelled in this Munich style while other shops worked more decoratively. During the Depression, Opplinger struggled to keep the firm afloat. In fact, his total sales in 1933 were $10,000. After World War II, however, he could barely keep up with demand. In the early 1950s, artists joined the firm from England. Church windows during this time included the All Saints Episcopal Cathedral and St. John's Episcopal Church in Fort Worth, Texas, and the St. James Episcopal in Wichita. In 1956, Opplinger suffered a heart attack, and Bill Opplinger, his brother, joined the firm. The Gothic style glass was fast becoming out of favor with churches and windows, and they were now much more contemporary. In the 1960s, faceted glass became more popular, and finally the migration was being made by the studio. Examples of this would be the Methodist Church in Chillicothe, Missouri. The post-suburban building boom after World War II was over, and there were not very many churches being built. The 1960s were good to the company, primarily on major government installations, but by 1970, the firm was closed. Brostrom said the triple windows that we see represent the Trinity. The six panes above stand for the six attributes of God, which are wisdom, power, holiness, justice, goodness, and truth. The organ was manufactured by Henry Pilkers and Son. It is an Opus 1230. It is a manual electro-pneumatic instrument with 30 ranks. It contains 1,076 pipes of both wood and metal, ranging from the size of over 16 feet in height to smaller than a pencil. I have no idea what this means. Pilker was a respected name in the organ industry for 114 years. At the time of the organ was dedicated, it cost $15,000. In 1994, we had a major renovation done to the organ, costing $325,000, and it was estimated to replace the organ would cost over $1 million today. The secret stairs. The stairs on the west side of the sanctuary lead down to Zimmerman Hall. There is an old painted glass window, and it is inscribed, "From a child thou hast no holy scriptures." And it was a gift to the church in the memory of Clyde Meade, who died at age 22. We believe the window was actually salvaged from the Second Presbyterian Church that actually was on this site before this one was torn down. The bell tower, 88 feet tall. The bell itself was a gift to the congregation from Alex McDonald, whose wife was one of the three charter members of the church in 1859. Mrs. William Smith and Mr. J.S. Culkins were the other two. The bell has called worshipers in all three buildings, beginning with the first church built in 1865. Information on the maker of the bell reads Henry McShane and Company, Baltimore, Maryland. According to Brostrom, the tower stands as a symbol of Christians reaching up to God. We believe the tower has actually been struck by lightning three times. The outside. The cornerstone is located between the two front doors. The children of the church had contributed the funds for it, so it seemed fitting that the children would place in the copper box such things as photos and the membership rolls of the church on the day when the cornerstone was laid on Sunday, April 6, 1924. The cornerstone is made of Carthage stone, and it was produced by local granite and marble works owner D.B. Bruce of Bruce Marble. A derrick was used to lower the stone into place and weighs 3,285 pounds. The swirling yin-yang designs on the exterior molded stone trim is a symbol of wholeness. Outside, the clover design above the ground level door represents the Trinity. And of course, the gargoyle on the northwest corner of the church is said to protect the church from stormy blasts of rain and ice, and maybe symbolically sin and death. After the service, we're going to provide with two different tours of the church. Carol Hill will meet you in the front of the sanctuary for a behind-the-scenes tour of the choir loft, including where at one time the minister's work office was located. As you're coming to the front after church, I want you to look up, look around, and think about some of these symbols and attributes. The original ceiling fixtures, changing the bulbs is not an easy task. Someone climbs out on a catwalk above the sanctuary ceiling, unwires the fixture, lowers it down to be cleaned and the bulbs replaced, then raises it back up to be rewired. The ceiling trusses are triangular, which are symbolic of the Trinity. The tusk on the beams are a reminder of the crown of thorns. Near the choir, on each side, we have the harp on one side and the trumpet on the other side. They remind us of Jericho and the heavenly music, anticipation of great things to come. The pews and most of the interior millwork are fumed oak. Fumed oak is simply a process where the oak is treated with ammonia so it darkens and brings out the grain pattern in the wood. The second tour will be led by Wendy Martin. Please meet Wendy in the narthex. On this tour, please look at the acacia leaves and the design details on the ceiling in the narthex. A lot of us never look up on that ceiling, and it's terrific. Located on the landing of the second floor, there's a simple bronze plaque dated 1939. It is a sculpture of Jesus Christ with his arms uplifted, meeting Peter leaving Rome and saying to him in Latin, "Where are you going?" The artist was Jorgen Dreyer, who lived from 1878 to 1948 and was recognized by the Kansas City Star as Kansas City's leading sculptor. Other Dreyer works include the stone lionesses in front of the Kansas City Life Building at Armour and Broadway, or the sphinxes at the Scottish Rite Temple at Linwood and the Paseo. Once in the balcony, note the three rectangular stained glass windows in the upper west wall. You can see that these windows are obviously different in style from the windows in the sanctuary, both in color and design. Although we are not able to confirm, we believe these windows are actually from the previous church building. If you are wondering if the balcony is safe, for all of you balcony sitting people, there you go. An article from 1925 in the Fort Scott Tribune said, quote, "The new reinforced concrete balcony was tested today with 12 tons of ballast, 24,000 pounds of brick and sacks of cement. It yielded 3/16 of an inch to this massive weight and was pronounced by the architects and builders to have stood a supreme test that will make it beyond safe and beyond any doubt for all the load of human weight that can possibly be crowded onto it." That's a long sentence from the Tribune. An article called "Reforming Church Architecture" by David Goebel, dated July 6, 2011, stated the following. According to John Calvin, the chief principle governing public worship is decorum, a concept that describes how we are to behave, dress, and I would add, build. Decorum is a general principle that encompasses propriety, gracefulness, dignity, and yes, beauty. Indeed, these are the qualities that should be sought in church architecture. The dignity, decorum, and beauty that we seek in designing places for public worship should extend also to the external witness of the church. We must not forget that besides being a gathered body of believers, the local church is also an earthly institution. Like all civic and commercial institutions, when churches construct buildings, they are building public statements about their identity. All buildings, whether art museums, gas stations, big box retailers, or churches, bear witness to the institutions they serve. Thank you for allowing me to share just a small part of the history of the First Presbyterian Church. I hope this information is interesting to our members and guests, and maybe give us a little bit more appreciation of this magnificent church building. Thank you.